This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You are on Joy 94.9. You're with Fiona and Mark on The Escape Hour.
Look, I was in the Yarra Valley last week on Saturday and it was stunning. It was warm.
Because you were doing a gin.
I did a gin making course where you actually are, you know, messing around with all the botanicals and you're sticking them in the big pot and you're watching it boil and you're
amazing.
Drinking and you're flavouring gins and you're tasting gins, and that was fantastic. Really,
so what did you flavour your gin with?
Well, the gin that we made obviously had a large amount of juniper and coriander, but it also had, I think, 8 botanicals in total,
and no ants
in this one. but they used finger limes as part of the infusion.
What's a finger lime?
So finger limes are a native lime. They're so incredibly delicious. You can find them in lots of quite fancy restaurants around town. Use finger limes on their dishes, but it's a little sort of stumpy little native lime, and you can open it up and you can actually eat it. So it doesn't have that really incredible tang of a normal lime. It's very...
The limey goodness comes through, though.
It's just much more subtle and quite delicious. So Yum. That was part of the infusion. Mm. And then we went to Tarawarra, beautiful art gallery there, and we saw the Patricia Piccinini and Joy Hester exhibition, and they have built this beautiful deck out there at Tarawarra, and I just wanted to sit out there all afternoon and drink wine and just enjoy the beautiful atmosphere. But my friend reminded me that we had to drive back to Melbourne, and we had to wait till we get back to Melbourne to have another glass of wine.
So it's going to be safe than sorry.
Yes, and it was just divine weather out there, so yeah, bring it on. How about you, Mark?
Oh, just travelling for work again. Spent a couple of days in Sydney, which I always love. Always happy to be in Sydney. It's a great place. I noticed that there was pride flags everywhere.
I bet there would be.
Because it's a lead up to Mardi Gras. Yeah, well, it's Mardi Gras carnival season or whatever, how they phrase it. But is it this week or next week?
It's next weekend.
Next weekend, yeah. So, every office I went into, which was several for the meetings I was in, there were pride flags on every desk, and it was like... and I was kind of a downtown legal and financial district, so usually pretty staid. And, yeah, it was pride flags left, right and centre. So I was really quite impressed with this time, because I'm usually in Sydney this time of the year just before Mardi Gras, but I'm not going to business meetings, so I was usually there socially. And, I was really impressed.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so great when everyone gets into the atmosphere. I mean, why
Absolutely.
Not? Why not? It's part of the celebration.
Yeah.
Bring it on and make it like a party. I think that everyone should be celebrating every day. Like, there should be parties every night.
We've got a viewing, haven't we, at Pride of Footscray, I believe, on
Is next that right?
Saturday. Yeah, yeah, Joy-sponsored viewing, I think.
And you know, SBS are telecasting the Mardi Gras, which is going to be an amazing event, amazing TV event.
Yep. Excellent. So, today we've got a special guest.
Oh, yeah, we have a guest. Now, on the subject of wine regions... Now, drinking wine. It's a nice segue. I've got an even better segue in a little bit.
But, have you?
First of all, we're going to introduce our guest, Matthew Barry. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So Matthew is a third generation owner. Is that correct?
Well, I'm the second generation, and so my sons are the third generation.
Oh, okay. Nice. Mm. Of Mount Avoca Winery in the Pyrenees.
That's right.
So where's the Pyrenees for those who don't know?
The Pyrenees... is amazingly close to Melbourne, with all the work on the freeways and things these days. It's an hour 45, 2 hours from Melbourne, depending where you are. So you drive out the Western Highway to Ballarat, take a right-hand turn a bit north, so central Western Victoria, kind of between the Grampians and Castlemaine.
Right.
So I tell everybody it's the middle of nowhere, but the middle of everywhere.
Right.
I love it.
45 minutes from... Mount Avoca, you have the Grampians, you have Castlemaine, you have Dalesford, you have Ballarat, you have all those wonderful historic Malden, the gold mining, the...
Because it's part of the Central Highlands.
Kind of in between.
Yeah.
So we're kind of between the Central Highlands and the Grampians, which is why we're in the middle of nowhere. And for decades, Tourism Victoria couldn't work out where to put us. So now we actually...
controversy.
Yeah, well, because we were kind of Central Highlands, but we're actually closer to the Grampians with the wine connection.
Yes.
So the Pyrenees and the Grampians winemakers actually work super close together. And we're north of the Divide, which is one of the secrets to why the Pyrenees and the Grampians has such fantastic wine. So
talk about that.
Not just the soil. So
it's the nowhereness.
It's exactly. It's this kind of, and that's one of the great things, is that because we're a little bit further out, we find that everything within an hour of Melbourne, fantastic and busy and great for tourism, we're just that little bit extra, which means when you go to a cellar door in the Pyrenees, you get that one-on-one attention. Because you're not going to have 25
bus
people
loads
queuing up before like your buses.
That's true. Those Mornington Peninsula wineries are busy.
They can be super busy.
Now, I'm going to interrupt this thought for 1 second. We need to go to a quick break and then we will continue on with the conversation and learn more about the Pyrenees and also the wonderful Food and Wine Festival that's coming up in Williamstown.
And we're also going to say thank you very much to Paul from Potts Point, who just renewed his membership.
Oh,
thank you,
he
Paul
heard us
Potts
talking
Point
about Sydney.
Yeah.
And how excited we were about Sydney. Thank you, Paul.
Actually, he did that before that. So thanks, Paul from Potts Point.
Oh, well, thanks, Paul.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We've got a live vintner,
winemaker. Winemaker.
Wine guy.
Let's be Aussie. Yeah, wine guy. I'm the wine guy. That's right.
From the Pyrenees. We were talking about the Pyrenees just now being just about, depending which part of Melbourne you're leaving, about around 2 hours.
Yeah.
So getting to the Pyrenees is usually by car or is there train service or bus service?
Probably by car.
Yeah.
There's train to Ballarat, but it's not super well serviced, like most of regional Victoria. But what is great is my office is in Hawthorne. One set of traffic lights between my house and the winery.
You know, it's a very interesting thing you should say that because I used to live in Daylesford and when I was looking to buy property in the vicinity around Melbourne, the idea of going out to the Yarra Valley and those other areas, no matter how beautiful they are, the number of traffic lights between where I was residing in Windsor, whereas when you're heading out to Ballarat and Daylesford and the Pyrenees, it's like one set of traffic lights. You're on the freeway. You're going all the way.
Yep. I love it. It's relaxing. It's not stop-start. There's not people. You just Westgate Bridge and then it's just freeway all the way, cruise control. Pay attention, enjoy the scenery, get there. It's very relaxing. Put on the Joy FM.
Yeah.
Radio all the way. Perfect.
Of course. And you can get us pretty much all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. I think once I was out heading towards the Grampians and we stopped off at a winery that's no longer there, sadly, which was, I think, Best's.
Best is still there.
Best is still there.
Oh, yeah. Great guns. Mm. Been there for hundreds of years. Thompson family. Won a Jimmy Watson a few years back.
Oh, really?
Oh, love. Fantastic wines.
How do you typify a Pyrenees wine? Obviously, they're award-winning, so it's some of the highest quality that we have in the state.
As we were saying earlier, we're north of the Divide, which means, and a bit of altitude. So north of the Divide means really hot days, but really cold nights. So people always assume because the Yarra Valley is kind of a bit, well, they think it's cooler. We actually pick our grapes around the same time, but our hot weather is hotter.
Mm-hmm.
But because we've got some altitude and we're inland, our nights are much colder.
Right.
So we get a bigger temperature difference between the daytime and the nighttime. And it's the crisp nights that really help define that quality of flavour. And so things like Cabernet, you get them fully ripe in the Grampians and the Pyrenees, that beautiful, ripe, blackcurrant, cassis kind of character. And you lose all of those sort of green, grassy, sappy characters that you don't always get fully ripe in the cooler climates, cooler ripening, as you were saying earlier, this beautiful March, April weather, these Indian summers that go on forever, not too hot, long ripening period. The longer the ripening period, the more flavour.
And more sugar.
Well, see, it's the sugar is what gives you the alcohol.
Yep.
Too much sugar, too much alcohol.
Can dominate the wine, can't it?
Well, yeah. Like some of those Barossa wines, as fantastic as South Australia is and as amazing.
Big.
And it's kind of like we don't drink 14, 15, 16% whites. It's just too big.
No one.
We don't sit in a big castle and have roast ox on a spit. We're kind of vegetarian, vegan seafood, which means we want lots of flavour, but you want some intensity and some lightness. You want that balance. It's like food. You know, no one sits down with heavy, stodgy stuff. You want flavours, but you want some lightness and some delicate flavours as well.
Do you think perhaps the lightening of the Australian diet over the last few years has also been part of the drive for lighter styles of wine? Or is it, you know, chicken egg, really?
I reckon that it all goes together.
Yeah.
See, wine is really the sixth food group.
Yes.
So, little triangle, wine is up there at the top as one of the food groups. And the best way to enjoy wine is with food, part of a balanced diet.
Mm-hmm.
We're all about responsibility. So
it's two glasses of wine, one in each hand.
That's it. That's right. Balanced diet, one each hand. Yeah. So you do that. It's like our food. You want good flavours. You want to have complexity. You want to have all those things that you have in food. Same in wine. Mm. You want balance. You want flavour. You want. That's why we love our region, because that fruit flavour in the grape, we manage it very simply, and we've got a fantastic set of winemakers in the Pyrenees and the Grampians. They get the fruit, and it's probably some of the best fruit in the world. Mm. We have very little rain at vintage, so no mould or mildew, less sprays. Of course, for us, because we're organic, we have no sprays at all, no chemicals, nothing. And all of that stuff is like our produce. All the master chefs, people love going to the market because you get that less processed, more fruit, flavours, intensity. It's clean, it's alive, it's vibrant. That's what you want in your wine.
Mm.
You want to just keep that magic.
Mm. So a lot of the, I mean, it's fantastic to know that you're organic. There are, of course, a number of different sectors in the wine industry. There's organic, biodynamic, natural wines, minimal intervention, orange wines.
All of that.
I was having a conversation with a friend the other day who didn't know what an orange wine was. And I said, you've heard of natural wine though, haven't you? And she said that she had heard of that. And I said, well, there's natural wine, which is similar to orange wine, which is similar to minimal intervention. But then you've got the organic and the biodynamic components as well. So you can still, there's not many wineries that have all of those components.
It's always a balance in getting that quality.
Mm.
So,
and commercially, there must be a bit of a question over some of those more exotic ways of producing wine, because not everyone's going to be interested in purchasing.
Yeah, it's like everything. The pendulum swings, you know, backwards and forwards between very scientific to very artisanal. And winemaking is that perfect blend. It's a Michelangelo thing. You've got to have your science. You've got to have
your new drawings.
Yeah, well, that too. It's always nice. It's that kind of balance. To do great art, you have to have some good science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So all those things, some of those wines, there's a reason we do some of those things, which is to keep the flavours. And I've had some, interesting wines. Not all of them have what I would define as the key attributes of a quality wine. If some of that stuff happens, you can lose those fruit flavours, which is, for us, important. That's what we do, the terroir, the region, the weather, the soil, all that stuff's really important. And you try and just keep that and keep it simple.
So how do you typify Pyrenees wine? What are we were touching on it before.
Yeah, I think in general, Victorian Shiraz is probably a little bit, not so much delicate.
Berries?
We're fruit.
Mm.
We're not overridden with enormous tannin and alcohol.
Like the South Australian big red punch in the guts.
You said that. Yeah. I'm not going to start a.
My brother's in the Barossa Valley. Yeah. He's a great wine.
But and I guess sometimes people think delicate, light, but we have an intensity. We have a richness. You can have lots of layers and complexity. You can have a lot going on without getting a sledgehammer in the head. So that's kind of, there's all that stuff going on, which is important.
I mean, with the cold climate Shiraz, I mean, often they're described as being peppery.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if that's so much the case in the Pyrenees.
Pyrenees, very much. Peppery, so spicy, that blend of plums and peppery spice. Pyrenees is renowned for having perhaps a little bit more hint of eucalypt than that sort of, that character comes through a little bit. Possibly more in some of the older reds. And anyway, tech conference, there's all sorts of research on where that comes from, and is it just the few leaves blowing in at vintage? Is it the oils coming off the trees? But there's a certain, there's a lovely earthiness. There's and some will have more pepper, some will have more plum and cherry, and you get that blend. That's what you want. You want, oh, it starts off with this ripe plum and then some black cherry, then there's a bit of spice, some Chinese five spice, some pepper. Is it black pepper? Is it white pepper? And all these wines, some years you'll go, oh, this Shiraz, it's cherry and black pepper. Next year, plums, white pepper. And it sounds crazy, but you go, yeah, no, this one's white pepper, this one's black pepper. You can smell and taste the difference.
So that keeps you winemakers busy, because obviously you have to always look at the fruit that you've got each season and then determine how you're going to... You can't necessarily apply the same recipe every year.
I would say it's almost a, well, organic process. It's like we do the same thing almost... And the joy is in the fruit. The fruit delivers.
Oh, so the fruit tells you what's going to happen.
We do the right thing.
Yep.
And it's like a plant. You don't tell a plant how to grow. You water it. You give it air and sunshine, and then it produces the flowers.
It does its thing.
It does its thing. So for us, we just do the right thing. We're tender. We're gentle. We don't have a 60-acre vineyard. We've got 120,000 individual plants that we nurture individually. We think of them as a home garden. We do it in like a gardener, plant by plant. We look after it, and then the wine does its thing, and we're like, wow, this year's got more of this. This year's got more of that. And that's the surprise. You do it, it's like, wow, how good is this? Oh, it's always amazing, but every year it's a different kind of amazing.
I think that you and I might have missed our calling, Mark. Don't you think that sounds like so much fun?
I think it sounds amazing. I'm enjoying all this wine poetry that we've...
I know.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. Joy.org.au.
We are here with Matthew Barry, who is owner and winemaker from Mount Avoca.
Wine guy who was talking earlier about when you were younger, you stomped on grapes.
I did.
Tell us all about this, because I always think of Lucy. Do you remember that scene of Lucy? No, I love Lucy.
No.
Go on YouTube. Lucy does this grape stomping thing. It's hilarious. But let's talk about your experiences stomping grapes in the Pyrenees.
Yeah. Well, in the old days, we'd hand pick and we had buckets. And the very first vintage, we had no shed. It was just outdoors. And we got these old stainless steel milk vats. And that was it. We had milk vats and that was it. And so no equipment. So
you had your feet. They were your equipment.
Grapes, tank and feet. And it's lovely. It's so squishy. It feels so nice through your toes. It's great. It's lovely.
Now, there is a reason why we did raise the concept of stomping on wine, is because we are also talking about the Williamstown Wine and Cheese Festival, which is coming up on the 9th of March.
That's right.
At Seaworks.
In
Williamstown. And they have a grape stomp romp. It's actually a thing you can go and do, so you don't even just have to listen to us talk about it. You can actually participate and win prizes.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, Matthew, if you had any tips, like if I was going to go and enter, if I've got bigger feet, does it help? If I've got, like, what's the deal?
I was just thinking that, because I think the competition is based on the most amount of juice out of those grapes. That's how you win.
Does that impact your weight? Like, will a heavier set person be able to get more juice?
Well, maybe not necessarily. Small feet are better because you get more pressure per foot.
More nimble toes.
Well, yeah, maybe
the PSI.
Maybe it's exactly
PSI.
Pressure per square inch. So what's amazing is if you get like a big truck, the actual dries over your foot, doesn't really hurt because the weight is spread over this big
tire. I've never tried it, Matthew.
But a bike tire, like a skinny little racing bike,
yeah,
all that weight is on a little thing. So maybe small feet are better, but maybe you go more rapidly to do lots of little squishes. And if you've got Ian Thorpe-sized feet,
yeah,
then maybe it's like Daffy Duck, you don't squeeze as hard. But I reckon we're going to find out in 2 weeks.
I reckon a flat-footed person might have more success than a high arch because, I mean, technically that's more surface area.
That's right. But is it surface area or is it pressure? So this is the thing. We're going to – it's interesting.
So
we're
going
to have to find out in Williamstown on the 9th of March.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Are you going to get up there and stomp on a grave?
Oh, look, I actually only discovered that this morning, which is one of the reasons why I raised it. I was like, oh, I've got to find out more about that. So you're participating in that festival and hence one of the reasons why you're here to tell us a little bit about it.
We've been doing it for years. I reckon it's one of the best – wine festivals, wine and cheese festivals in Melbourne. It's a good size. Some of them get stupidly big and you just sort of lose that interaction between the people that come to enjoy the experience. And everyone's there. It's an owner-operator thing. You're talking to the people who either make the wine or the cheese. Everyone's super involved. And I think that's what people like. Don't want to go to the kind of the big commercial faceless thing. Everyone behind the stand is involved with their business. They have that integrity to be there and produce and promote their own product. So that's great. And you get time to talk to people and that's fantastic. And
so who goes? Is it
Everyone goes.
I can't say it as a real family thing.
It is quite family friendly.
Okay.
They've got things, but
I think so. I mean, there's a lot of
kids love their wine and cheese.
Well, I think the parents love it, and the kids they've got face painting or whatever. They're kind of this activities for the kids.
Okay.
But I would say generally lots of couples. Everyone's 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, but probably more 20s, 30s would be probably the biggest demographic into the 40s. But it's people go out and they have the day, and we do some – obviously, we promote our wine. You can come along. You can buy a glass.
And you're doing a masterclass.
We're doing 100 years of wine.
Oh, how do you sum up 100 years of wine in a masterclass?
You will taste 100 years of wine.
So you're bringing wine that is 100 years old?
I'm going to bring several wines together.
That are going to be the total 100 years.
So there could be some 25-year-old wines. There could be some 30-year-old wines.
Oh, wow. Okay. And,
yeah. So to get to 100 years – I'm not going to bring 100 wines that are 1 year old. That's going to be like, that'd be just too crazy.
You'll need a sack truck.
Yeah. So four or five wines, which means they're probably going to be 20 to 30 years old.
Fantastic.
And we can go through the differences. We'll have wines that are a bit younger. And most people tend to drink wines that are between 5 minutes and 4 years old.
No one has
old wines anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think the days of putting down wine... I mean, I know that there are people that do it, but, you know, it's far less these days.
I think, we're in that kind of a bit of a fast food culture. So I love the slow food movement. I love people taking time to get back to that kind of, I guess, thoughtful way of living. And I think we're going to get back to that. Everyone I speak to now is, I work hard, but... I'm doing yoga. I'm doing meditation. I'm mindful. That is taking time to look after yourself, to have some self-care, to really think about me, look after yourself. And that involves not rushing around, not eating on the run. We sit down. We look after ourselves. We're with people that we enjoy to spend time with. Take time. Enjoy quality food. Enjoy quality wine. There's no rush. Life's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yep.
Like the cafe in somewhere in Northside that's actually banned takeaway coffee.
That's right.
So if you want coffee from that cafe, you have to sit down and have
a
cup.
I love that idea.
That's a great idea, isn't it? Big fan of that one.
I bet they don't have drive-through.
No, I doubt they would have drive-through. You probably can't even find a car park if it's Northside. But anyway.
Somewhere to park your penny farthing.
That's a good plan. You know, there is actually a penny farthing. There's a thing called the Tweed Ride.
Oh, really?
I do digress a little bit, but there's That's a thing right. called the Tweed Ride where people actually dress up in tweed clothing of vintage styles, and they go on bike rides. And some of the bikes are old, some of them are penny farthings, and they do a thing. It's called the Tweed Ride, and you can participate in that in Melbourne.
Oh, really? Is it all steampunk or is it retro or is it
Well, I guess you could be your own interpretation. I think there's probably
I bet people have goggles on and I love a goggle.
Yeah, a little bit of steampunk. Yeah. But there also could be like, you know, dorky university style and, you know, just
fantastic.
Channel like some 1930s film that you really like or 1940s film and get on a bicycle and you
That's
know,
the cat's pajamas.
It's just no Lycra. I don't know if they have a ban on Lycra for the Tweed Ride. But
I'm pro-banning Lycra.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
But it's a slow ride. I guess that's the getting that's the back, point. To,
oh,
the
back
point.
To the point. Yeah.
And I think, as you were saying, I think because people are now getting a bit more aware of not rushing to everything, it's like, yeah, so that hopefully people go, well, yeah, let's drink those wines that are a little bit more aged. There's more complexity. There's more going on. So
when do you think the social imperative to rush and do everything at once came from, and how do we unwind that?
That's drinking more wine. That's a PhD in in socials. I mean, social media, everything's instant. Everyone wants stuff now. It's like, yeah, yeah. But sometimes you have to wait. The good stuff, you got to wait.
I agree. Yeah, I'm down.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
It's the escape hour.
With Fiona.
And Mark.
We should do the voiceovers on, you know, where people put them on their answering machine, flatmates do.
Remember, answering machines, full stop.
With tapes in them.
With tapes.
We had a listener call in asking what happened to Amy Winehouse when she was performing. And it was in February, because it was Valentine's Day. And she passed away in summer that year, so about 4 months later. And the performance was heartbreaking. You could see a star fading in front of you, and there was no joy in it. Zalan, I think it was Zevran, her co-singer, basically did the show for her. She was it was clearly disoriented, in a very unhealthy mental and physical space. It was heartbreaking, and you know we walked away with it going, she's not going to last, and then she didn't.
Yep.
So it was very heartbreaking. So thanks for asking that question. Sorry it wasn't a better story, but there we go. Sorry. We're talking about Williamstown.
We're talking about
Wine and Cheese.
The Wine and Cheese Show.
9th March.
9th March at Seaworks. I've not been to Seaworks. I'm imagining it's got a lovely aspect over the Maribyrnong. Is that right?
Yeah, we're going to ask Matthew Barry, our Mount Avoca wine owner, who's going to be doing a masterclass there.
I am indeed. Right on the bay, Williamstown.
Right on the water.
It's not on the Maribyrnong.
No,
I'm thinking of Science Works. I got my S Works.
Right. Yes. Down further. So you've got the boats, you've got the big ships, you've got the warship, there's museums, it's the foreshore.
It's a bit of a hot spot these days. There's
fantastic.
A couple of great restaurants down there. And I do apologise, listeners, I was talking about Science Works. Seaworks.
And I've been there before, done some of the wine and cheese festivals before. But since then, it's been renovated. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it is better and more wonderful than it ever was. And it was always great. There's nice indoor-outdoor spaces. And even if it's hot, because of that proximity to the ocean, it's just a really lovely atmosphere. You get that nice, I don't know, that health-giving ozone air off the ocean. It's awesome.
Well, I'm going, actually, just a little plug here. I'm actually off to another wine festival this afternoon.
Are you?
I'm off to the Prosecco Festival.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and a lot of the Proseccos
will
be coming. Oh, it's at the Northcote Town Hall. Tickets are still available, I'm sure.
Are you going to ride your penny farthing?
I think I'll be catching the tram.
Yeah, good idea.
A friend of mine, Mel Brower, runs that. She's otherwise known as the Prosecco Queen.
Ah, I've heard of her.
Yeah, she's super lovely. I think this is the second year of the Prosecco Festival, and it will no doubt feature a lot of Prosecco from the wine region being the King Valley.
The King Valley.
And the Ovens Valley, another beautiful wine growing region as well.
You're doing something with the Maestro of Mozzarella. That's Amore Cheeses, Giorgio, who has also been a guest on our show.
He's great.
Isn't he amazing? Do you remember Giorgio?
I actually have been to a party once, an event where he was making mozzarella at the party, out of the hot water, how they do
Can
that.
Can I tell you a secret? It doesn't go outside this room.
No, we won't tell anybody. No, not a soul.
I swap mozzarella with wine with Giorgio. And so I go home with this amazing mozzarella.
Because
he goes home with Mound of Ochre, but don't tell anyone because we just don't want the ATO to know about it. But we just swap a couple of bottles of a bottle of wine for some cheese. And he's doing a masterclass. There's a Prosecco masterclass. We're doing the 100 Years of Wine masterclass. It's going to be so amazing.
Super fun.
And it's going to be beautiful weather still, I assume. Yeah. So, if you're living on the other side of the bay, you can pop on the ferry, get across to Williamstown St Kilda.
I've always wanted to do it. I've never done that.
You can,
bike. I've talked about it a lot.
Ride your bike, get a ferry across.
We need to make a date.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yep. Or there is that
walk
punt.
Across the West Gate and shut it down.
No, I don't think so. But there is a punt. There is a punt that goes from Port Melbourne to Williamstown.
A punt.
I believe. That's why Punt Road is named Punt Road, because of the punt that was once upon there before there was a road. Sometimes I wish they'd bring the punt back and get rid of the road.
It's a dreary old road.
You'd need a lot of punts, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
1,000 punts back and forth.
Yeah, you need a lot of punts.
I don't think that's going to work out.
No.
Now, one of the things we were going to touch on, of course, because the Pyrenees is such a beautiful region in the middle of nowhere where everyone should go.
Exactly.
Is you not only have the beautiful winery and amongst all the other gorgeous wineries in the area, but you also have some beautiful lodges, which are quite luxurious looking at the photos.
They are. The Ecolux.
Ecolux.
Because we're ecological.
Yep.
And we're luxury. So nestled amongst the olive grove, we've got 700 olive trees. In amongst the olive grove are three lodges that look over the winery, the vineyard, the Blue Pyrenees, the ranges, all of that. So you see that beautiful landscape. Wake up in the morning, you'll see kangaroos out the window. They're just hanging there, having a munch on the grass. They come and
they
go.
Do they eat the grapes?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. I just didn't think they dug anything other than grass.
No, they love grapes. But they are variety specific.
Oh, do they?
Is that right? Do tell.
Are
so
they
what
into
do they
Shiraz?
Prefer? I reckon they'd like white grapes.
No, they like Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet. Because of that green grassy flavour. Methoxypyrazine. It's the thing. They like some varieties more than others. It's quite interesting.
So how do you keep the critters off the...
Big fences.
Fences.
Very tall fences.
Yeah, 2 metre fences.
So do you have wallabies and kangaroos or mostly kangaroos?
Probably more wallabies, actually. I think we say kangaroo, but a lot of them are actually
I'm a big fan of the wallaby. I love the way they look like little boxes. Mm. They're so cute.
Anyway, the lodges.
The lodges.
80 square metres. And what's great, like you were saying earlier, hanging out, having a wine, relaxing, have to drive home, have a lodge.
Yeah.
You can stay at Mount of Ochre, then you can drive and visit all the other wineries nearby. Mm. Half an hour, 45 minutes, you can go to Dalesford, you can come back, you can have some wine. Yeah, there's plenty of space and we've got unlimited tranquility.
Unlimited?
As much as you want.
It's like Bonnie Doon.
It is.
the tranquility.
Tranquility, that's right.
You know, I just would hate to see it when that joke dies out.
Serenity.
The serenity. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds quite beautiful. And how long have the lodges been there for?
About 6 or 7 years. I think it was 2011 and 12, I think, our official opening.
There are a number of restaurants in the area. Does Mount of Ochre have its own restaurant?
We're waiting for the critical mass to get to the point where that's possible. There's just not enough people staying overnight.
Yeah. So in the region, what are your favourite places to dine for people that are visiting?
There's a few little places that come and go. We organise food from some of our local caterers. So we can do these really fantastic hampers and they'll do, quiches and salads and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of stores. The Olive and Lavender store is great. They do some fantastic, really fresh home-cooked foods. You can go up to... Warren Meng, I'm not sure, they've changed hands. fantastic restaurant. I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that, but they historically they've been fantastic. Got some,
and you've got Ballarat, which is having a bit of a foodie moment at the moment, isn't
Ballarat's
it?
Ballarat's amazing. They've got so many great restaurants, and then Dalesford's fantastic.
Yeah,
there's a lot of really, middle of everywhere. But
when's the Chill Out Festival in Dalesford?
That is actually the Labor Day weekend, so it's the weekend after Mardi Gras. It's the Mardi Gras
it's
after party.
Soon. Yeah, yeah.
So that's the 9th and 10th, I think. Yeah. That's actually the same weekend.
So DC works one day and then the other one the day after.
That's right. Well, I think the Chill Out's big day is the Sunday because it's a long weekend. I think it's a bit more Sunday, Monday.
Yeah.
Mm. I might go this year.
I used to live in Dalesford and I went a few years in the early stages of Chill Out. It was a really, really lovely, lovely event.
12 days, 20 hours, 8 minutes and 15 seconds away from their countdown on their website. There's a lot going on in this part of Victoria.
We're the festival state, aren't we?
Oh, we sure are.
Are we also South Australia?
Ah, oh, they were, we are now.
We've taken it over.
Take everything
We've taken
them.
The Pyrenees.
Now, one thing we haven't really touched on is, as a winemaker, just having a little bit of an international glance, what are the wine regions you most enjoy visiting when you are out and about, out of the country?
Well, I did live in France for a while, so I've got a bit of a soft spot for France.
Any particular part of France?
Oh, I had lots of friends in Bordeaux, and that's kind of the classic, you know, Cabernet Merlot kind of Cabernet Franc. They're the big classic. Mm-hmm. The original claret is Bordeaux.
Claret.
And of
in
course,
a goblet.
Yeah. And I think
with
what
some
I'd,
fromage.
Yeah. What I do love is
and some pain.
Some pain fromage. What I do love is like Beaujolais, because here we're so far away, it's not in a kind of weird way because of our hot climate. You think Beaujolais would be the thing we do, but we tend to do white, rosé or red. But going there, they have this thing where the Beaujolais Nouveau comes out and it's the first one to get the Beaujolais out. And
it's middle
fresh.
Of November, isn't it?
It's like super fresh. They pick it, they ferment it, boom, and it's out. And it's like, wow, this big thing to try and get that. And it's kind of fun. And
I love a Beaujolais with a fruit plays.
Remember fresh. The 80s when the Beaujolais sort of arrived in Melbourne?
Yeah.
And so like 1984 or 5 or something,
I
remember.
Yeah, I was born.
Oh. Well, I was. And I was of drinking age at that point. And that
really?
Was, 80s? Yeah, 85. Well, 84 I left school.
That's too much information.
That's thrown me. You're much younger
She looks
than
so
that.
Young.
Oh, no. I'm a... There we go.
There you go. Now the whole world knows.
I'm a change of the
drinking
subject.
Wine when it was just in a cask.
And what's funny, even though I've got this real... I speak quite good French. I live there. I work there. Go into Italy and... They're always so super friendly and their life is like, I guess, all those places. France, Italy, Spain. I did go to a place in the south of France, Spanish border, Banyuls, and that's this really weird wine that they put in these earthenware jars.
Mm, yes.
And they bury the jars out in the field. Half underground.
So it ferments and ages underground.
It kind of goes a bit like sherry. You get this kind of ranciere character.
Right.
And it's, but just the whole process is it kind
sweet?
Of feels so medieval. That's kind of dry, but it's just this really.
Well, we did have the wonderful Aidan Rafferty from, who specialises in Georgian wine on the show late last year. Maybe you weren't here for that show.
No.
That was fascinating. We talked all about Georgian wine and the many, many varieties. I think they have 18 varieties of red wine.
Yeah.
That ranges to black.
Yeah. Ooh. And there's there's so many varieties that we've never heard of because I guess up until recently we've got this very Anglo-centric culture, which English, France... You know, the kind of we fight you in wars, but we drink your wine. There's been that kind of stuff. And then I guess from the war we had a lot of, you know, Italian food and wine culture. But it's only been really
German,
recently.
South Australia.
Yeah, true. But the Georgian, there's so many different varieties, Hungary, Moldavia, Georgian, and there's
Lebanese.
Varieties. Yeah, there's varieties that we just don't know anything about. But
I love Lebanese wine.
Fantastic.
I'm a bit of a fan of Lebanese wine
as well. Yeah, Qusara especially. Qusara, because of the Lebanese mountains, there's...
Well, it's snow, it's in winter.
Yeah, but in the wine areas, in the valleys, it gets beautiful sun on one side and then there's no sun on the other, so they've dug in the cellars into the mountains, so it's perfect cellaring. It's amazing. Love it. So, Matthew Barry from Mount Avoca Wines or Winery?
Mount Avoca Winery.
Winery. You're at the Williamstown Wine and Cheese Festival on the 9th of March. You're doing a masterclass, 100 Years of Wine. What are the key takeaways that you hope people are going to learn from that? Without spoiling it, what are people going to be
the big
telling
secret,
their grandchildren about?
The big secret with wine is it's all about joy. Mm. That's what we live for. We live for joy. We listen to joy. Oh, that was such a bad pun, sorry. But,
irresistible.
It's irresistible because people get caught up in the complexity and they lose sight of the simple things. I make it, you drink it, you smile. You can make it complex.
Joy wine.
Just smile.
Yep. Let's have a joy wine. We need a joy wine bar.
We do. Thank you very much for listening in.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.